Okay, it is 6 o'clock, so we'll call our meeting to order and welcome everyone this evening on this snowy evening, both here with us in person and online. And it's great to see everyone wearing pink today. So Pink Shirt Day, of course, is an annual anti-bullying initiative that brings people together to stand against bullying and promote kindness, respect, and inclusion. So this year's theme, Kindness is a Superpower, highlights the meaningful impact simple acts of kindness can have on others. So we're very proud to support that today and every day. Our first item of business is the approval of the agenda for February 25th, 2026. We have a motion.
I'll second it.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Next item is the acceptance of the minutes of February 11th, 2026. Are there any changes required to these minutes? Hearing none, we'll accept the minutes as presented. Next item is business arising from the minutes. Anything to come before council this evening? Hearing none, we'll move on to presentation. We have two this evening. The first is with the Shelburne and Area Chamber of Commerce and their funding request. And we have Charlene Harris, who is the past president, and Anita Goodfellow, who is the director with the chamber. So welcome, ladies. If you want to come up to the podium and just get you to turn the mic on there, and then everyone will be able to hear you.
No, you need it red.
You need it red, yes. There you go.
Usually it has more white.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay.
And welcome, and I'm pretty sure you know everyone.
I think so, and I think everybody knows me.
Yes. So welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, Warden and fellow council members and administrative staff. I'm going to start the presentation tonight, and my fellow director, Anita, is going to finish it up. I'm the past and she's the future.
Great combination.
Oh, I'm telling you, yes. Yeah, because I can talk about all the other things that happen. I'll start by updating you on our application for accreditation. We did not receive the accreditation from the Accreditation Council of Canada. Their review noted that there were some areas that needed more clarification and some explanation. They offered to provide us assistance in those areas. Noted that to obtain accreditation, a chamber must have staff. Many smaller chambers are volunteer run and may never be accredited. And even staff-led chambers may not be able to fulfill the accreditation standards due to limited resources. It's a lot of administrative work is put into it. So smaller chambers may not want to have to put all that in, but we have, trust me, we've done ours. So we will continue to work with them and going forward. The positive outcome of this process is that the chamber has guidelines for being credible and accountable. We develop policies and procedures outlining all aspects of our organization and stress that a 3-year strategic plan to support our chamber's mission should be a priority. So we've learned all of those exciting things to do. The next thing is the Barrington Chamber merger. It was a great initiative in theory, and it's not to say that at some time it may occur, but at this time, Barrington Chamber did not want to merge. We respect their decision, and we will continue to work with them on projects and advocate on issues that affect our communities. The Barrington Chamber this year will be hosting the Shelburne County Business Awards in October, of which we will be working closely together on that. The other thing is that the Shelburne Chamber geographic area is Shelburne Town, Shelburne Municipality, and Lockport. So we feel that our boundary works within the boundaries that we are focusing on now. The Beacon app was developed as a marketing tool. I'm hoping all of you had a chance to go on and look at the URL. It's paid up to 2007. It was a project that we did in 2022 with the COA funding. And the app has great ability to be expanded in areas of tourism and business marketing. It's easy to use. It just needs to be adopted by all marketing that is done in the area. I'm going to turn it over now to Anita, and then we'll do whatever questions you have.
So Anita, do you know everyone around the table here, or should we do introductions?
I've actually listened to some council meetings, okay. So I feel that, yes, okay. Probably Paula is the one I know the least, but she'll probably have some tough questions for me today. I'll know her after today. Well, thank you, Charlene, for setting the stage and bringing everyone up to date where we are at the moment. And thank you to council and especially the municipality for your generous support over 2 years of funding that we have received of our 3-year funding agreement. And your contribution of $24,000 to date has been significant, and it's enabled us to do a significant part of strengthening our organization. And I'm more familiar with the real estate industry. And so I equate our progress to when you have a new construction site, it seems to take forever to come out of the ground. But once it comes out of the ground, it just takes off. And honestly, that's where I feel our chamber is today. We've done the groundwork, as Charlene said. We now have a vision, we have a mission, we have a strategic plan, we have policies and procedures. And so all that is in place. And now it's really when that fun, creative, you know, building part can start. And part of that is it's already happening in the board of directors that we have. We have a really strong board of directors. We have David Shute, who is here today. And he spearheaded the updating of the Shelburne Walking Tour brochure. And he's now working on organizing for the Visitor Information Center to be open this year. And then we also have Mary Scott. She leads our social community events. So we participated last year in the Miracle on Dock Street. And then this year we're taking over the street dance. So that's going to be a great community event and also a really good fundraising event for us to get closer to self-sustainability. We have Andrew Locke, he's the chair of your Economic Development Committee, so you know him well. He's a very smart local businessman, great ideas and sensible mind. We have Bill Guy on our board, newly returned to Nova Scotia, and he's interested in combining community with the chamber. We have Shara, our treasurer, who keeps us all in line. And then Charlene, who you all know, who's been our leader for many years. And I joined the board last year, and together with Charlene, we would like to focus on education and networking for our members, growing our membership and advocacy. So on our board, we have representatives from the fishing, tourism, retail and real estate industry. And we have 2 more chamber members now who are considering joining the board. So I really see that momentum in our board and organization. So even though we didn't merge with Barrington, which had been one of your criteria, and we didn't get accredited, we do hope that you see all the things we have achieved. We have a strong foundation, and we now really need that final $12,000 of your funding agreement to put our plans into action. We need to grow our membership, and not only do we need to get more members, we especially at this point in time need to make sure that we give value to our members. So we're working on expanding our affiliate programs. Last month, we had a presentation from the Chamber Plan Insurance Program. Next month, we will have a presentation by BrokerLink Insurance, who will be offering discounts to our members. We've reinstituted the monthly Lockport coffee meetings and are in the process of setting up monthly educational and networking luncheons in Shelburne. We're excited, motivated, and we're ready to go. And this is the time when we need that final $12,000. We need to hire an executive director to work on membership growth, membership communication, planning and organizing events, social media, etc. So this next stage will help us become a self-sustaining organization. This year is incredibly important for us, and we're on the cusp of something great. And I think you are similar to us. You are also that construction site that is coming out of the ground. You have a super strong foundation with a vision, a plan, a strategic plan, strategic land acquisitions, and you're ready to go. And we're all at this most exciting turning point. You're trying to stimulate growth and attract business, and we're the organization that represents business. So can you imagine what we could do together? So I really hope that you will decide to support us for this one more year. And I thank you for the opportunity to join, to share our journey with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Anita. Can definitely feel your positivity, and it's wonderful, really, when to listen to that. And the belief you have in the chamber and what it can do for the community. So thank you for that. Are there any questions or comments for Charlene or for Anita? I had a couple. I'm not sure if anyone else wants to go first, but I'm kind of looking at Councillor Shan, but I know she knows all about you guys being a part of you. So
I don't feel I need to ask questions because I'm very aware of everything that Anita just said. And everything she's saying is truly the vision of what the chamber has had recently. Yeah. And well done for everything that you guys just said, because you captured very well what has been happening and the strength of moving forward of what the chamber has going for it right now, I think is really great.
Wonderful. My couple of questions, one you answered, and that was, the hiring of an executive director. So that is something that you're working toward.
Executive director, maybe more of an administrator.
Okay. I'm going to get you just to come up to the podium there, just for the people who are online with us.
Sure. We are working with, we've met with Nova Scotia Works to look at some programming that could be available for that as well.
Okay.
And this year we also looked into something that we didn't know, that nonprofit organizations could actually go back 4 years to get their HST, 50% of their HST back. So from our project that we did in 2022, we did recoup some money from that. So that has helped us out just to keep things going.
Good.
So, I mean, we look at every avenue we possibly can. Executive director, maybe more formal than we need. Maybe we need somebody that's just more of an administrator to come in and help us. We've got the groundwork done. Now we just have to follow it and try to put it together so that we have somebody that's energetic and wants to get things going.
And has the time.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So we're hoping for full time. That will depend on what we can muster together. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Do you have another question?
Yeah, I had two others. How many members do you have currently?
I think it's probably around 46, is it? It's 50. Close to 50.
Okay, Anita, if I can just get you to come up as well, just for the those on.
Our membership is a little sad. So we are just under 50. We got 3 new members this last month.
Okay.
And again, I think with us having focused all this time on the strategic plan and on that foundation, we really haven't been very visible. We haven't been very visible to our members or to the community. So that's where I see when I talk to new businesses, I get excitement of joining. So I don't see that it's the cost of it that's a factor. I think they would like to see more of us. They would like to see more networking opportunities. And so I'm not worried about growing membership. I should look at my partners here. I think if we can offer a bit more, we can grow our membership.
Excellent. Yeah. And my other question that I had was just an idea about your annual budget. What amount for your annual budget are you expecting for this year?
Good news is that this past year we had an executive director for half the year, and we haven't received your funding, and we're still here. We're actually going to end this year in a slightly better financial position as we did last year.
And to work with our strategic plan, we are working on that budget line type thing. So we can't really work on budget until we know if we're going to have any funding.
Right.
So
yeah,
we're still pursuing.
What would be an annual? What would your annual cost be? About 50,000 or 75,000?
I would think it's about the 60,000. Because our executive director is probably half.
Yeah,
like that's a good 35,000
with the executive director one based on administrative assistant one.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Any other questions or comments, Councillor Thorburn Irvine?
So just a couple of questions, and maybe piggybacking onto what our warden just asked, perhaps in a different way. I remember 2021-22, it was on my radar screen. I attended one of the Chamber of Commerce meetings, and it was at the time that they were going to be presenting the Beacon as an app. And at the time, I remember, and I think it's recognizing as well, that every system is on a continuum. We have our ups and our downs, and it really sounds like you've got a solid team behind you, so that's great. But back then, I was talking to a business, and they felt like the Chamber at that point in time wasn't really meeting their needs. So they didn't feel the need to join. And so I think given the positive energy and the strength that you've got in your members, you know, you're going to push that forward, because in the end, people want to be on the road to success. So that was, so just one second here. The street dance. Now you'll have an idea of what revenue, So potentially, what are you looking at in terms of how that will add to your revenue side?
We hope that it'll have a profit to us of $8,000. Yes, so significant.
Sure.
Yes, and for your membership comment, I just want to put in our policy and procedures and in our plan, we now do have an annual member survey that needs to get done, which I think is going to be really
important.
Speaks
to that, right? Well, congratulations on all that you've done.
Yeah, that's a great idea, actually, the survey.
Yeah.
As well, you all, well, I shouldn't say you all know, but I mean, it's been very hard to get businesses to unite in any way.
Right.
So, and a lot of times we will have members, but they don't really participate. So, you know, you can only do what you can do. The handful of volunteers that we have put their life into it type thing, right? So I'm hoping that we'll get more support and more information from the businesses as to what they want. We can't give them something if we don't know what they want.
Sure. And you know, Char, honestly, we all are involved in different community organizations or committees or whatever. And you know, in any construct, there's the joiners and there's the ones that don't.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not easy, huh?
And it's no different in business.
Exactly. And, you know, for a small business operator, maybe they feel like they just can't, right? So it's got to be whatever they feel is an advantage to them.
Yeah, a lot of their issues is taxes. And, I mean, we can advocate for you to lower taxes. But if you lower taxes, then you're going to lower our services. So, I mean, it's a catch situation. So how do we balance that? I think we could be more effective in the taxation side if we had more information from the municipal units that would say, this is how things go, you know, and we can promote it that way. Because a lot of people don't understand that taxes are part of life, I guess.
It's true. But you know, if we all drive it, just as Anita had said and what you've added, if we all drive on the economic development front, I mean, that's kind of a pinnacle to be able to reduce taxes, because we've got a bigger base, a stronger base.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once you reduce them, you're not going to get them. You're not going to be able to put them back up. Right. Yeah. So if we want services, we need to have taxes too.
Yeah. And I'll go to the deputy warden next. But just before that, I'll look to the CAO. And I believe CAO, when it comes to revenue for the municipality, a commercial rate, it equates to about 14% of our total revenue.
14%, yeah.
So just, yeah. So, and I believe our tax rate is one of the lower ones in the province as well. So, but still hear that, you know, understand with businesses, it's a big deal. Taxes.
But I think also letting businesses know that, but, you know, and I mean, I can't see how anybody can't see that. I mean, of course, in Halifax, the taxes are going to be higher than they are here. Mm-hmm. I think what we get most of the questions about is, what am I getting from
service delivery? Right?
What are my services I'm getting? Yeah. So, you know, we have to work with those types of things as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. Yeah. 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 And a lot of it comes down to communication.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah. So.
Communication and understanding the whole taxation system type thing.
Absolutely. I have Deputy Warden and then our CAO.
I just want to say thanks for the presentation. I am a member of the chamber through
and
my regular job.
Heidi.
Yeah. And working together with the business awards 2 years ago. We didn't do it last year, but the year before was very good.
Yeah.
And I think the businesses look forward to that. One of the things that I heard from the people that come into my office is even to just a little blurb after each meeting, what's going on. Mm-hmm. So the voices are heard mm-hmm. from those small businesses. And I encourage them to reach out and become members so their voices are heard. Mm-hmm. So that might be something that we need to kind of mm-hmm. advocate, that if they got concerns, come to this chamber meeting and be part.
Yeah.
And we'll listen. So.
Thank you.
I am. Sorry, I'm sorry to say this to you. Just on the Business Excellence Awards, like that is something that I believe is so, so important in our community.
And we would have had it last year, but Barrington wasn't in that spot where, and we try to work from one area to the other area so that it's a combined thing.
Yeah.
It is a Shelburne County Business of Excellence Awards.
I guess for me, it's about the recognition for our businesses mm-hmm. and just to let them know how much they are valued.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times you'll hear people say, you know, we're just always trying to get more businesses in. Mm-hmm. Well, what about the existing businesses and the value they bring to the community? So
well.
I think it's really, really important. So glad to hear that that will be happening this
October. We're starting early this year.
Awesome.
Real early.
I just had two questions. First question is, have you had any success getting support from the town council?
We've met with the town, and we're having another meeting tomorrow with the town. Success in which way?
Funding.
Not financial.
Okay. And the second question I had, thank you, Charlene, the future self-sustainability,
mm-hmm.
have you got a sense as to how many members you'll need to be financially self-sustaining? Have you got a sense of that?
Well, we're really promoting the chamber plan, as you've seen in your documents there. We'd love to have the opportunity to talk to your staff regarding that. That's a way that the municipality can support businesses and support the chamber 100%, because we get a percentage off of that. We've had several members join that group already, so we're hoping to push more on that so that we have the finances coming in every month. To be financially sustainable, no more. I really can't say. I think we're in the midst of doing our strategic plan and doing up our budgets and all that kind of stuff. So we're in this almost the same thing that you guys are in right now. And I'm sorry, I should have been more prepared for that, because I knew you'd ask me those questions.
We don't have all the answers either.
Oh,
so
okay. I feel okay then. But we will get them to you.
Any other questions or comments for Charlene or Anita? If not, thank you, ladies, so much for your passion and your commitment and everything that you're doing through the chamber. We really do appreciate it. And you're most welcome to stay for the rest of our council meeting. And Dave, I know you're quite involved as well, and probably Gordon as well. So thank you all for what you're doing for the community. All right, we will move on to our next presentation, and that's with Crystal Fuller and Jennifer Nichols, Brighter Community Planning and Consulting, and that's regarding our subdivision bylaw. And I assume those ladies are with us virtually this evening. Yes, I'm with you here this evening. So
hello.
I'm a senior project manager with Brighter Community Planning. I'm here representing Crystal and the rest of our team. And I am going to just share the presentation over, and you let me know if it's loading.
Here we are.
There. I don't have my finger on here. There. That's better. So good evening, and thank you for having me tonight. You're going to recognize some of this content from the presentation that Callie and I did before Christmas, when we were talking about sort of the generics of a subdivision bylaw. And now we are back with the final draft for first reading. So through the Provincial Municipal Government Act, as you know, municipalities are required to manage and ensure compliance with local strategies, approve new creation of lots through regulating the subdivision of land. Having a local subdivision bylaw allows the opportunity to ensure that your local planning goals and strategies that you've worked so hard to enact, your municipal planning strategy and the land use bylaw, that those pieces are carried forward into the subdivision bylaw. And it also allows the subdivision policies to be really specific to the geography of the area. The standards that are kind of up to the individual municipality, roads, wastewater, stormwater, water, open space dedication and submission formats. So these are kind of the pieces that have been workshopped with staff, and those are the pieces that are now, we were kind of talking about theoreticals before Christmas, that have now been required to have been updated to actual policies. So this is just a general review of why the subdivision bylaw is required. And really the objectives are to, again, have that specific geography to prevent conflicts, land use conflicts, and servicing conflicts later on when lots or new infrastructure is created. And of course, your MPS policy directs council to adopt and maintain the local bylaw. So you're following through on that policy commitment. When the decision-making process, kind of that internal staff workshopping, when decisions were needing to be made, really this bylaw addresses the local context, but it does it in a way that is not adding extra or really high standards for things that are kind of are above and beyond what the local context requires. So the bylaw does help ensure accurate lot registration and building placement, does meet your policy requirements and also the requirements of the MGA, and helps to ensure that infrastructure that is created through the subdivision of lots is created in a way that is maintainable and safe for the present and the future. Again, a little bit more of the background, you know, we've kind of covered that. These are the specific policies in the relation to the MPS, the regulation of public streets through subdivision. So the groundwork was really laid for these policies in the subdivision bylaw through both the MPS and the land use bylaw. So these you know, policies dovetail nicely with your existing requirements, and in much the same way, don't
add any extra or onerous regulations. So the key policy elements, the open space dedications. So under the MGA, this is a requirement, so this isn't optional, but the MGA reads that either a land dedication equal to 5% or a cash in lieu equivalent for open space and recreation has to be made for the subdivision of five or more lots. In discussions with staff, given the vast geography and the, you know, following the example of some other municipalities that have now been divesting from small unrelated parcels that were given through dedication, the decision was made to proceed with primarily a cash in lieu equivalent. That funding specifically is able to be used to support other recreation and open space projects and maintenance within the community. There is the opportunity that if a subdivision is occurring in an area possibly adjacent to an existing recreation area where there's a desire to expand, or in an area where through the open space and parks planning, there is a desire to have it, there's still the opportunity to do that. But generally speaking, the procedure will be cash in lieu so that you don't end up with a bunch of disconnected parcels that you're not able to maintain. Digital submissions. So this is just requiring that when plans come in, they have a digital submission along with the paper copies to support infrastructure mapping and to keep your internal mapping up to date. That's a fairly basic requirement. The municipal specifications. So for roads or any municipal public roads or municipal services that would be created potentially by a developer on behalf of the community or the municipality to be turned over later, that those are built to recognized standards. So because the municipality doesn't have a specific standard at this time, the bylaw references published acceptable standards with the opportunity for municipal engineer to utilize the best engineering practice for what is appropriate for the project. The subdivision bylaw also enables performance securities and bonding for any road and infrastructure so that they're completed before final approval to a standard that is acceptable. And for private road development, ensuring that the construction quality and long-term sustainability of private roads is maintained for the safety of the residents and the maintainability in the future. The context and the policy direction for private roads that council may regulate or prohibit subdivision on private roads confirms access and easement for services and travel. So the bylaw defines construction and width standards, requirements for secondary access or egress, and that is, you know, something that is not going to be, you're not going to necessarily have a second exit or entrance on a five lot subdivision. But if you do have a larger rural development, that will ensure that there is that safe egress. And also linking back to wildfire mitigation and emergency access policies. Streets and servicing. The street designs must be approved by municipal engineer or public works. Because new streets become vested in the municipality upon registration, it's really important to make sure that any new municipal streets are built to a standard that is acceptable. So the road construction intersection standards, requirements for drainage and stormwater, and integration with any other policies like active transportation or parkland are part of that policy. Again, the open space integration, up to 5% of land dedication or equivalent cash in lieu. So this just ensures that the, you know, continued creation of new subdivision lots helps contribute back to the community in that way. The other piece that is going to be slightly different is the process for subdivision approvals, that concept plans will be required for any subdivisions that are going to create new public streets or new public infrastructure, and otherwise the tentative and final plan process would proceed as usual. It references the road standards, servicing, open space standards, incorporates bonding, and aligns with your land use bylaw requirements for frontage area and access. So it really is meant to work with your existing policies to ensure that subdivisions happen in a planned and safe way. The other item that is a little bit different is that the subdivision by instruments is restricted. That's really something that's intended for occasional and simple rural lot creation or boundary adjustments. So that's going to be restricted to the rural resource zone only, and will not be used as a substitute for a plan of subdivision where a more detailed review is required. So we are, you know, back down here on phase five of this project. The public consultation and stakeholder consultation have taken place, and those comments have been received and incorporated where appropriate. And obviously we're here tonight for first reading. We'll be submitting the final document for second reading early next month, and then a month from today it'll be presented, anticipated to be presented for public hearing and second reading. So it's a project that is certainly nearing the finish line, and I'm happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Okay, thank you very much, Jennifer, for your presentation. Gosh, it's been a long journey, or it certainly feels like that, with the municipal planning strategy and the land use bylaw, and now this. So thank you very much for the information.
You're nearing the end of the long, long journey of having your own, you know, specialized documents.
A very necessary journey, though.
Necessary, absolutely.
Are there any questions or comments for Jennifer regarding her presentation? Councillor Thorburn Irvine.
Thank you, Warden. So in terms of open space, on page 9 of 16, it talks about 5% or cash in lieu equivalent, and it's mentioned again on page 12 of 16. And so it is the job of council to set direction, and it's not just today or even next year's subdivisions, but it is into the future. And we'll be left with it because there's no undoing it. And so we want to stand back with pride that we've integrated a mix of housing and green space that dignifies that housing. So open spaces, as you said. So you mentioned on page 12 of 16 that there could be cash payments in lieu. And I'm not quite sure what that means because, you know, developers are going to come in. It's just important that we have green space. And I'm sure as a planner, you know, you understand that very well.
Yeah, so I understand that very well. And what we see in a lot of large rural municipalities. I live in the municipality of West Hants, and I have served on the planning advisory committee here. And what we tend to see is when there are sort of an infinite number of these small parcels created, what happens is the municipality doesn't have the capacity to service them as a park. To leave them as open space, there's questions of liability if it's not a serviced area. So There are several other, West Hants is one of the municipalities that are now going through the process of actually divesting of those properties in most cases, because they don't have the capacity to manage them in a sensible way. And the money in lieu option allows you to kind of concentrate your funding into being able to have something that's really maintainable, maybe something that you otherwise wouldn't be able to afford as a municipality. I don't know if splash pads are a topic of conversation there like they are here, but everybody wants a splash pad. And it's just a question of what's possible within your staffing and your budget. So it's certainly a conversation that we had, and it doesn't by stating that cash in lieu is generally going to be the preferred option, and oftentimes that allows for an additional housing lot, that kind of thing. It doesn't mean that if there is a situation where you've got something and you want to expand it, or you've got something and it doesn't have a parking lot, that you couldn't accept pieces of land in areas that make sense, that are, you have the staff capacity and the finances to maintain them in the longer term. So that was kind of the internal conversation and the thinking behind that, and looking at some other municipalities that have had their subdivision bylaws longer and now have a collection of rural properties that they don't have capacity to do anything with. So that's kind of the balancing game, I guess, with respect to open space, for sure.
So if I could just ask another question. So I've never really thought about who maintains open spaces. So you're saying that there's liability there? I mean, if we set the standard and the infrastructure is put in place for subdivisions, and we know that green space is important for human health, is it the municipality's responsibility to maintain the open spaces within a built environment?
Yeah, the way that the open space, like the way that it works now, is that land is actually given over to the municipality. So I am certainly not a legal or liability expert, so I couldn't speak to that. But in a situation where you had something that was intended to be green space in a subdivision, if someone pulls up a camper on it and just squats there, like if there's garbage, if people are lighting fires, these are the kinds of things that, if I was in charge of it, I would worry about. I definitely can't speak to what exactly the liability would be, but the process is that that piece of land is given over to the municipality. So there is some responsibility, and if there's an issue with it, be it garbage or, loitering or whatever, it would be up to the municipality to deal with it. So.
No more questions right now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Great question, actually. CAO.
Thank you. Hi, Jennifer. The question of the 5% land dedicated to green space or the equivalent cash in lieu, does it leave the option up to the municipality to decide which one they want?
Yeah, and we... So what's presented in the MGA is that it's an option. It is certainly up to the municipality, because you can't be obligated to accept land that you don't want. So, and oftentimes, a developer is happy to pay the cash in lieu to have another bit of developable land. The other sort of administrative thing is if you're accepting land, you have to set, it does say that it has to be land appropriate for use and that kind of thing. But then someone also has to administer, like going out and looking at the land, and is it acceptable and does it meet our standard and that kind of thing. So even at the outset, the land option does have kind of an administrative component for staff. But the conversations that we had internally were that really the preference would be cash in lieu. but not taking land completely off the table if it's in an area, you know, and that might be something that, you know, staff could identify on something, you know, if council was interested to see that. But like, these are our existing resources. And these are areas where we either hope to grow open space parks or recreation, or where, you know, we could see it would make sense with our open space plan and with, you know, how people use our use the space in our community. And you could accept it.
Sorry, can I just jump in there?
Yeah.
I just want to know specifically the language within the subdivision bylaw. Does it allow for the municipality to have the option to choose one or the other? Just going towards the councillor's concern here.
Yes. Yes. And okay. Let me look up the exact language for you so I can share that. I've got it right here. So it's written that the subdivider shall provide to the municipality a cash contribution in lieu of land dedication equivalent to 5% of the value of the market lots to be approved. If you know, you that's how we've got it written, because that was, you know, based on our kind of internal conversations, that seemed to be the most sensible choice. And then the following policy: funds collected pursuant to this section shall be used by the municipality for the acquisition, improvement, operation, or maintenance of parks, playgrounds, trails, or other public open spaces or recreational purposes. So it is a requirement that any funds collected through the open space dedication are used for that purpose. So it does create a dedicated bank of funding for that. And there are a few small, like if you consolidate land and re-subdivide it or things like that, if there's no additional lots being created, it doesn't apply to that. So, you know, someone who's just doing some cleaning up some boundaries isn't going to have to dedicate public space in that way.
Great, thank you.
That answers your question. Great. Any other questions for Jennifer? Excuse me. We do have the first reading later on in our agenda. As I said, it's been a long process, and I think we were one of the last to kind of complete this, but I guess the advantage of that is the best practices that we can learn from as well. So
absolutely, and that did definitely come into those conversations as well. So if there's nothing else, I will leave you to the rest of your meeting. And I do just want to congratulate staff and council and everyone on getting, I know it's been a process and you're going to be so glad not to continue to have these things on the agenda likely in the future, but it really, it's a really important milestone. And I think everyone involved in the process can feel really proud of the work that they've put into it.
Yes. Well, we certainly appreciate all of your assistance with this. So again, thank you for your presentation and enjoy the rest of your evening.
Yeah, have a great evening. Bye.
Bye for now. All right, we're going to move on to economic and community development. We have one item, Shelburne Events Committee, Terms of Reference Revision, and that's Ms. Smith. Welcome.
Hello. We just have some updated terms of reference that we need to have approved. So as you all know, the committee started in 2021 just as community members. You allowed it to become a committee of council in 2023, and we put some terms of reference out then. We've since identified that there's several updates that were needed in it, so we've made some changes. But I think what I want to mention is that the key change is really the biggest key change is permitting appointment of up to two council members from both the municipality and the town of Shelburne. And also increasing our community member numbers up to a maximum of 12. And I think everyone will understand that given the growth of the events over the past couple of years, that these changes will better support us in the future. If there was any other questions about the terms of reference.
I think it's pretty straightforward. And there is a prepared motion. If someone would like to make that, please.
I'll do that.
Councillor Gould.
Be it resolved that the Council of the Municipality of the District of Shelburne approves the updated terms of reference for the Shelburne Events Committee as presented.
Thank you. Seconder?
I'll second it.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Excuse me. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor of the motion, excuse me, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is carried.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Moving on to operations and protective services. First item is subdivision bylaw, first reading, and that's Ms. Dion. Welcome.
Good evening. So we just had a presentation by Brighter Planning in regards to the new subdivision bylaw. And my staff report essentially is just a recommendation that we go ahead with the first reading and start the process of getting the feedback on the proposed bylaw.
Okay, thank you for that. There is a prepared motion if someone would like to make that, please. Okay, thank you.
Be it resolved that the Council of Municipality of the District of Shelburne give first reading and forward to the public hearing the attached subdivision bylaw as presented.
Is there a seconder?
I'll second it.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Okay, next item is J Class Roads cost sharing agreement with the province.
So this staff report is in regards to a cost sharing agreement that we have with the province. This agreement comes up for renewal. I believe it's every 3 years, and the current agreement is about to expire. So it expires at the end of this fiscal, and the province has provided us with a draft cost sharing agreement for signature to cover the next 3 year period. It does not put us under contract to do any particular road maintenance. It just says that we have a contract with the province that if we choose to apply to undertake road maintenance, then that cost sharing agreement is in effect for that road maintenance. There is a potential that we will have an application within the next 3 year period. So I think it's a great idea for us to renew our contract with the province.
Okay, thank you for that. There is a prepared motion. If someone would like to make that, please.
I'll make the motion. Be it resolved that the Council of the Municipality of the District of Shelburne authorized the Warden and Chief Administrative Officer to sign cost share agreement number 2026-019 with Nova Scotia Department of Public Works for J Class Roads.
Thank you. Is there a seconder, please?
I'll second that.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion on the motion? I have one question regarding if we were to cost share, and once the work is complete, does that road become ours at that point, or is that still a provincial
road? I would have to look into that in more detail, but it's my understanding that the existing J-class roads remain as J-class roads, and they do not become the ownership owned by the municipality after that work is completed. But I would have to confirm that for sure.
Okay,
thank you. That's my understanding as well.
Thank you, CAO, Deputy Warden, and then Councillor Thorburn Irvine.
So is it my understanding that there is no change in the two agreements from our previous one to our one we're signing right now? They're pretty much equivalent other than the expiry date?
It's a 50-50 cost share, and it's the same as it was previously.
Excellent. Thank you. Councillor Thorburn Irvine.
Thank you. And it's just a question more for the public. I know we don't have many, but do you know, can you give us the kilometers of the J-class roads, please?
I did print the list. I believe that it's just over 2 kilometers in total for all roads combined.
I'm pretty sure you're right on that.
Yeah.
It's a minimum amount. But I believe the cost that we pay toward J-class roads is around $40,000 annually.
I believe. Maybe closer to 50, but
or maybe
it's 50. It's essentially two different things, though. This is for projects, for maintenance projects. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if we chose to grade and resurface a J-class road, we would share in 50% of that cost.
Right.
The amount that we pay for our J-class roads in the budget that you'll see in the operating budget, that's for the general maintenance, like the plowing and whatnot, that takes place regardless. This is for special projects.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. CAO?
Thank you. Just to answer Councillor Irvine's question, we have 2.31 kilometers of J-class roads, of which 1.01 kilometers is paved. and 1.3 kilometers is unpaved.
Interesting. Okay. Thank you for that. Anything further on that item? If not, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Next item is tipping fee review.
So as we're all aware, there has been some changes at our C&D site, our construction and demolition transfer station. And as part of that, our shared services partners have asked us to look into the tipping fees, and council, our own council, instructed staff to look into potentially increasing the fees at the site. And I just wanted to point out that this staff report, although I'm presenting it to you here this evening, it was completed by our staff, Danielle Smith, our waste diversion officer. So she's not here to do this, so I'm presenting it on her behalf. There is an annual report that is attached to this as an attachment, and what it does is it details the, it's very hard to see because it's a very large spreadsheet, but it is in the package. Yes. And what that is, we can see it when we zoom in. What that spreadsheet is every municipal unit in the province fills it out to show what they charge for various materials. This particular one was last updated, I believe, in March, and I can't see it either. So it is a little bit out of date, but it is only renewed once, it's only updated once per year. So we consulted this document to look at what costs were for residents to dispose of their waste throughout the province and use that as a guideline for setting our own fees. The other thing that was taken into account with developing these recommendations is our own site. And as we pointed out in the various C&D site reports over the past year that you've had from staff, we have a different situation. We do not have a disposal site. We have a transfer station. So our material is essentially handled twice. Residents drop it off at our site. We pick it up, truck it, and drop it off at someone else's site. So a resident who lives in an area that has a disposal site goes and pays their fee to dispose of it. We charge a fee to dispose of it, but then we have to pay to pick it up, pay to truck it, and then pay to dispose of it. So we are not recouping our disposal costs, let alone our trucking costs, our staffing for the facility, our maintenance for the facility and upgrades and whatnot. So one of the principles that was brought to us in the other council meetings was that we'd like to explore having the people who use the site most offset some of the costs. So, or contribute, I shouldn't say offset, contribute more to the costs of the facility. So by increasing the tipping fees, that would create a situation where the people who choose to use the site and want the convenience of having it in that location and want to be able to dispose of their construction and demolition transfer waste locally, they will pay a fee to do so. So there are a few scenarios for you in this report that suggest what that tipping fee could be or should be. All of them represent considerable increases over the current. Option one is about a 50% increase, option two, about 68%, and option three, almost 70%. So these are considerable increases. You can choose other amounts, but these are the amounts that were seem to be the best fit with our existing costs and that spreadsheet of existing fees throughout the province.
Okay, thank you very much for that. I've got a list of questions here. I'm not sure if anyone else has questions. Okay, I will start. So the provincial average, provincial average. So that would include HRM, that would include all of the
provincial average for everyone who responded to that document. Okay. So there are some units that didn't fill out for every type of waste.
Yeah, I guess I was curious as to like the Southwest Nova kind of average as well. Whether or not it would be much of a difference or not, I don't know. But
that I can't tell you because we didn't calculate that. But what I can say is the Southwest Nova average again, reflects disposal facilities, not transfer.
Right. Okay. Yeah, trying to compare apples with apples. So what is the, and I'm not sure if this is something that you can answer this evening, but I'm curious as to what the total amount of the projected revenue may be with increases for these different options.
That's the $1 million question, because we don't know what our volumes are going to be under the new site operational model. So we can predict based on historical numbers and what we think might be the reduction in volume based on the new model. Mm-hmm. But again, nothing will be known until we have actuals.
Right.
So with that in mind, I can give you some very, very high level estimates, and I do not want to be held to any type of numbers. This is based on estimates of potential volumes of waste to be tipped at our site.
That's all
okay.
We can expect.
So under option one, we would bring in approximately $143,000 in revenue. Under option two, we would bring in approximately $160,000. And option three, we'd bring in approximately $162,000. So not a whole lot of difference between option two and three. Option three would essentially give us the option of charging more for the treated lumber portion, which is costs us more to dispose of. So if there was a summer that people did a lot of decks that summer, or there was some type of commercial project with a lot of treated wood, that one would generate more income than option two, but it would only be if that scenario happened.
Right. Yeah. And to your point, I mean, we don't know
really
what type of season we're going to see with people doing renovations and new builds and all of that.
That's correct.
Yeah. So thank you for that. Thank you for knowing that that was going to be a question of some sort that you would have an answer for. So let me see here. And I think everyone knows, excuse me, when we talk about non-resident, we're just talking about people coming from outside of the municipality, town of Shelburne, town of Lockport.
That's correct.
Facility. It's not non-resident as in someone coming from a different country or
That's
something
correct.
Like that.
That's correct.
And
the reason that we put that in place, it's a category that doesn't get utilized very often. But what we were seeing or potentially seeing is that if our rates were so much lower than some of our neighbors, people were choosing to bring their waste here and make us pay to handle it because of the lower fees.
Yeah.
So in order to avoid that, we implemented the non-resident user fee. To avoid it, in order to mitigate that.
Mm-hmm. And just looking at the three options, I was curious as to whether or not there was any thought given to maybe phasing in these increases. So say, because it, like you said, it averages probably about a 50% increase, which is substantial.
Yes.
And whether, 25% increase in year one and the same in year two.
The hesitation with that is that a couple of things. One, it doesn't keep up with the annual inflation, which always continues or usually continues to go up. So we'll never get caught up with what we want in an increase plus that inflation. Mm-hmm. But also we're at a point right now where we are totally revamping the site, revamping the operational model. We are spending the funds to advertise. We are trying to get some information out there to let users know what we actually have there. And when I say that, we get a lot of people that, one, refer to it as the dump, two, that show up with the contents of their basement or their attic, and they don't recognize that we don't have that type of facility. It never has been. We're not, those type of items are accepted curbside. We only accept construction and demolition transfer waste. The only items that we take that are not construction and demolition transfer waste are the lobster traps and the rope, the brush, the leaf and ward. So other than that, the only materials that you're able to dispose of as our, at our site as per our Nova Scotia Environment and Climate Change permit is construction and demolition transfer waste.
And I think that's so important in the communication of all of this to our residents so that they can have an understanding of that.
If we're going to be sending out advertisements about what you can bring there, if we're going to be sending out advertisements about the new days of operation, we're also going to be sending out advertisements about the new tipping fees. Mm-hmm. So in order to take advantage of the advertising money and not have to spend it twice, we think that we should essentially rip the Band-Aid off and increase the fees, you know, an amount, and then perhaps make an agreement that we will review them annually or biannually or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much for answering all of my questions. Deputy Warden and then Councillor Thorburn Irvine.
I just have one. With the options, the spread seems to be $10 between resident, commercial, and then non-resident. How do we come up with that spread? Is that consistent throughout, because the writing is so small, but
yeah,
is that consistent? Because I have a leaning towards option one. However, I would like to see commercial and non-resident higher.
Right.
Either $15 spread or $20 spread.
Right.
I think our residents should start at the lower, the 130, but I think there should be a wider spread with our commercial.
And we're more than open to your suggestions. The motion is your guys's to make. These are just some recommendations of staff. So if you want to have a discussion about that and give me some instruction.
So the $10 though, that came from what we gathered in
data? It came from what we gathered in the data.
This one?
Sorry, I should actually clarify one more thing. It also came from our own site data. So our site, there's not a lot of commercial users in the sense of large commercial users. There's small scale carpenters, you know, people that have maybe one or two employees that do local renovations. We're not necessarily, the commercial rate gets charged to those people because they are a business. Mm-hmm. We do want to encourage small business, or I think we do. And I think when we think commercial, we think of the big companies that might be building, you know, a large facility or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that's not really who's actually paying that fee.
That's an excellent point. Thank you for that.
However, we do have a couple of the larger commercial users that could fill our bins pretty quickly.
Yes, they definitely could. However, as you're aware, in the last report, when we made the decision to go over to the roll-off containers, the roll-off containers that we have can only be loaded by hand. I don't think you're going to see large-scale commercial loading them by hand. I think that they're going to choose to utilize a different facility.
Mm. Okay. And just kind of to a point you made earlier, you know, this is our first year going into really a new way of dealing with waste management. Right. And until we're in for a couple of years, that's really going to tell us how we have to tweak things moving forward. So really appreciate the amount of work that you put into giving us as solid, as concrete numbers that we can work with moving
forward. What I can also say is that Danielle has worked with the staff at the site and worked with the point of sale system, so we picture your debit machine, to create reports where we have a greater access to data and a greater access to different data than we've ever had before. So we're in a position now to track the site usage in a multitude of different ways, by user, by material, by location, that sort of thing. So that data is available to us now, and we're going to start having that, you know, on an annual basis.
Okay, great. Just before I go to Councillor Thorburn Irvine and CAO, was the staff report discussed with the two towns as well, with the options?
It was shared with them once it was ready for the package.
Right.
But we did discuss the increase in the tipping fees, not the amounts of the tipping fees, but it was discussed with them at our last shared services meeting. Town of Lockport was not present at that meeting, but there was a list of questions forwarded to us from the town of Shelburne, and they attended the meeting in person. So we have discussed the fact that we would be looking at increasing the tipping fees with both towns, yes.
Yeah, great. Thank you for that. Councillor Thornton-Irvine, CAO, and then Councillor Cool.
Thank you. I entirely agree. And I think most of us at the council table would agree that the reset, the massive reset that we've done, the communications, as you've stated, are critically important. You know, we're back down at ground zero, new path. So it is critical because of the public perception of what that is. And you express it so clearly, that continuing message going forward. It'll take a while to sift out. So, you know, and I also like your messaging around us. It's strategic in terms of ripping the Band-Aid off. This is our opportunity, our window of opportunity. And, you know, I did a massive renovation on an old house, and I was out at the C&D site a lot. So I would be representative of that single house, work that gets done on the typical old Nova Scotia home. I never left that C&D site without feeling like, man, did I get a good deal?
Yeah.
I think that something to keep in mind is these percentage increases seem like a lot, but a metric ton of waste is actually a fair amount of waste. So your average homeowner who's doing a small scale renovation, the sort of actual cost to the project, yes, it's a 50% increase, but in dollars, that might not be as considerable as you might imagine.
Thank you. CAO.
Thank you, Warren. When you're considering which of the three options to go for, the one thing that you haven't seen yet, you haven't had your budget deliberations yet. I just want to say to you that this budget is going to be a very challenging budget for us. And when you're looking at choices like this, trying to bridge the gap between our expenses and our revenue, I think should be a consideration. Going forward, I just wanted to point that out.
So just to your point, so are there amounts? There must be amounts in the budget that, like, does it adhere to like option one, two, or three, or did you just take an average for what you might?
These are not in the budget yet.
Okay, they're not in
these,
the budget.
These right now, the budget is based on current numbers only.
Okay.
If you decide to proceed with this, we would have the opportunity to do a budget change prior to the next public meeting.
Okay, great. Thank you. Councillor Cool.
Thank you. Good presentation. Great presentation.
Thank you.
I was looking at first the idea of option one, but I caught two words in option two and three that I don't see in one. One is just upping some fees. Two and three are cost recovery, and I love what it says in there. It will support a financial sustainability in two. And which really makes a lot of sense, where option three, it could affect people saying, well, we're not going to use it. So I think right now, I think when I came in looking at this, I was looking at one, but I think seeing this a little more, I'm heading more toward two.
I just want to clarify.
Cost recovery.
I do want to clarify something. Cost recovery doesn't necessarily mean net zero.
No, I understand
means that you recover a greater amount of the cost.
And I understand that.
Or you offset a greater amount of the costs. Okay.
Thank you.
I just don't want to mislead anyone that these numbers reflect that we'd be able to cover the full costs of operating.
Well, I understand
deficit.
Just that I wanted to
okay.
That.
Yeah. Thank you, Councillor Cool. And that's a great point because, you know, when we look at our budget and our tax rates, you know, it's an all-inclusive tax. So even though, for example, you know, I might not use the C&D site a lot. Actually, I don't think I've used it in the last 2 years. I may be the person that has that street light out in front of my place. So it's kind of a subsidization of all of the services that we have. It's an all-inclusive rate as opposed to a user fee system.
That's correct.
For me personally, I'm leaning toward option one and looking to find out what our numbers are in another year or so that we can be more certain as, or as certain as we can be, I guess, when it comes to waste management. And then if the amounts need to be increased, that we look at doing it then. There is a difference of $19,000 between option one and option three. And so that's where I'm leaning. Councillor Shan?
I'm kind of looking at it in the manner of there's been a lot of discussion and controversy of opening and closing the site, with the initial decision being to close. We've managed to find a way to keep it open. So I kind of feel that residents may be even be expecting that there's going to be a difference, that if we want to have this open, be able to keep it open, that we do need to make a change. And it's the only change we can make is to increase these fees. So I'm personally leaning for option two. It's somewhere in the middle. And like you say, it provides a little bit more cost recovery to hopefully be able to keep this place running, functioning for future years to come.
Great points. I agree. Thank you, Councillor Shan. Deputy Warden?
So I'm still leaning towards option one with a greater spread. Because when I look between option two and option one, the biggest change is in the scrap metal, because that's $70 a metric ton compared to the flat rate of 10. Mm. The treated wood is still the same, while the mixed is a little bit different. I think if we look at the option one and make that spread a little bit more, greater, we still have the $10 flat rate of people bringing their metals, which in turn we're getting the revenue off of those when we sell them.
Yes, that's we right. Also pay the freon removal for those as well.
Yeah, and at that, the freon removal can be added to option one, which I think it is.
It is.
It is $20. Yeah.
So that hasn't changed. So we're still charging that the customers the $20.
We never have before, but we're suggesting we implement
it. Option one, it's still the same.
Yes.
With the $20.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm leaning. I'm leaning to option one. With a greater spread of $15 between the resident, commercial, and non-resident.
I think that's a great compromise. Councillor Sutherland.
I kind of agree with Heidi's. Yes, I do agree with Heidi on this one. There should be a bigger spread between an option one for commercial.
Okay.
$15 sends, if she said, sends like a even amount.
Okay, so just so that I'm clear, and Ms. Dion as well. So when we're looking at the 140, are you saying 145 or 155?
145.
Okay, between resident and commercial. Okay, so 145.
And then the non-resident will be 155.
Okay, and do you only want to make that change for treated wood?
All of it.
So the spread isn't the same for each item. So can you give me an idea?
So the first
two lines are $10, correct?
Yes.
So they will go to $15, the spread between all three, right?
156, okay.
Yeah. So your next one is $10.
Yep.
So that would go to $15.
Okay.
The flat rate would remain the same. Flat rate would remain the same for the rope. And the freon would remain the same.
Okay, so I'm just going to reiterate. Yes, so treated wood for residents would be 130 per metric ton. For commercial, 145 per metric ton. And the non-resident, 155 per metric ton. Mixed C&D, 120.
No.
Hang tight.
No?
160. So it would be 15 between each.
Oh, see, I thought you were putting each one up by five.
Nope.
That's what I thought too.
Nope.
Okay, so 130, 145, and 160. Okay.
Okay. 121, 136, and then I gotta do my math.
So is that
the math actually doesn't math for the next one? So
so we have moved everything up so it would still go up to $15. So the 151 would so
166.
Still 166.
Right?
Yeah.
Mixed C&D is actually $20 different from commercial and non-resident.
That's correct. So 15 would be.
So it would be 121, 136, and then
That's correct. That's why.
Okay, so the 151 would stay the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I wasn't able to add it because it didn't.
Yeah.
It didn't work.
Give me those numbers again, please. 121, 136,
151.
151 would stay the same.
Okay.
So then 67 per metric ton for leaf and yard waste for residents, 82 and 97.
And then scrap metal.
And then the other three would stay the same.
Items for Freon would remain?
Yep.
Yes.
I just think with the scrap metal, if we go so extreme at 70, and then I know it's metric ton.
Yeah.
However, people will hoard it behind their house or whatever. At $10 a flat rate, and we are getting the revenue back on that those items, I think it's a fair, you know, give and take with our residents.
Part of the thought process behind that is that we offer metal pickup twice a year at the curbside. So people have the option of putting something out for pickup, but year round, they also have the option of bringing scrap metal to us, but also appliances to us. And all appliances that are on the site, again, require the Freon removal if they're a fridge or a freezer. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we pay for around this time of year. Actually, it should be taking place within the next few days.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other comments on this before I ask for a motion and then I'll read it with the numbers.
So, you know, I'm sure this will be covered off in the strategic communications that will go out to the public, as you suggested. You know, you wouldn't want it to be seen as a threat, but could there be a reminder of what dumping and what littering is and what those repercussions are? Because while most people want to comply, there are those that stand out from the majority.
I hope everyone tunes into our most recent community conversation that details all of the various options for disposing of waste within our municipality.
We're going to have to blast it out, I think.
Okay, I'm going to, and I assume Deputy Warden, you want to make this motion that council approve option one, moderate increase with flat rate model, treated wood, resident, and so I'll read resident, then commercial, then non-resident, $130 per metric ton, $145 per metric ton, and $160 per metric ton. That was for treated wood. Mixed C&D is $121 per metric ton, $136 per metric ton, and $151 per metric ton. Leaf and yard waste, $67 per metric ton, $82 per metric ton, and $97 per metric ton. Scrap metal, flat rate across the board, $10. Rope, gain, flat rate across, $10. And then the items with Freon, $20 per unit across for resident, commercial, non-resident.
I so move, just what thank you just said.
Is there a seconder?
I'll second it. Sorry.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion on this motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Thank you very much for that. And please thank Danielle for all of her work on that staff report and all the options. Next item is under administration, and there's a write-off for AAN00889997, and that's our CAO.
Thank you very much, Warden. This is another voluntold report. Thank you, Michelle. So the Clyde River Busy Bee Club was dissolved and was struck off the registry of joint stocks. I've learned another word today. I don't think I've learned it, but I see another word that I don't know the meaning of. It was subsequently escheated to the province of Nova Scotia. No idea what that means, but I guess it was given to them or they took it. So the lawyers have actually advised us that we strike off that debt, write off that debt, I should say. So that is the motion before council tonight.
Thank you, CAO. Would someone like to move that motion, please? Councillor Shand.
I move that motion.
Yes, please.
Be it resolved that the Council of the Municipality of the District of Shelburne write off the balance of $557.76 on AAN 00889997 using GL 00-282-11-000.
Thank you.
I'll second that.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Okay, moving on to 9, committee reports and warden update. Are there any committee reports to be discussed this evening, Councillor Sutherland?
Not really a committee report. I attended the Ingemar Fire Department. They gave had an award ceremony for volunteers, and it was a well-thought-out event, a well-planned event, and I would like to make special mention to Basil Acker with 58 years of volunteer service for the Ingemar Fire Department.
My gosh, that's a lifetime. 58 years. Congratulations to Basil, for sure. And I just put it out there, too, for all of our council. If there are ever, you know, those types of events that you're aware of, and if you know, we can provide a certificate to those members, we'd love to do that. 58 years of service is certainly something to be celebrated. And I believe probably the month prior to that, I believe at Gunning Cove, they had a couple of members. I don't know if they were like 50 years or 50, mm-hmm. but it was a substantial number of years. That is true commitment and dedication to the community, for sure. So please extend to Basil our sincerest congratulations.
Thank them all on behalf of the municipality.
Wonderful. Chairman. Super. Thank you. Any other any committee reports to come before? Okay, Councillor Thorburn Irvine.
Sure, thank you. So the 18th of February, there was an climate change. It's Narcan, or it's not Narcan, but it's NRCAN-CRCC, Intermunicipal Learning Session. So I attended that. That was very good. And there was... So that was that date. There was a lunch and learn that same day on the Rick Hansen accreditation construct. I don't know what the exact term was. Just really good in terms of any building going forward. If we're always checking that off, accessibility, and it's just so important. And it's such a useful tool. It's already been done for us. And Warden, you had stated that we met the accreditation standards here in our municipal build.
CAO, we did.
That's so.
Gosh, I'm not sure who would have done that. Actually, when we first moved in, we were our whole outlook, I guess, for this building was to make sure that it was accessible
right.
to everyone. Yeah. It seems to me there were documents or forms that we had to fill out in order to get that accreditation. And I think we were going to get like a small plaque with that.
We were supposed to get a plaque, and I don't know how that's fallen through the crack, but it has fallen through the crack. I'll look into it.
Yeah, wonderful. That would be great. I think that's, very important to showcase that we are, we do believe that that is a priority for the municipality, that everyone has accessibility to everything that we have to offer, not just here in our building, but throughout the community, whether it's, the project that we did with Welcome Park and making that as accessible as possible, and anything else moving forward that that we're involved in.
Right. So on the 20th, I attended the council orientation, not that I'm a new councillor, but, it's always nice to hear from those people, those leaders of expertise. And then it's something that I haven't done, but it's sort of in keeping with the climate committees that I'm on. There's a national climate caucus. And so it's much bigger picture, but again, it's almost through osmosis. It's good to hear what's going on in the wider sphere. So that was good as well. And that's it. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing those. Councillor Kuhl?
I did also attend the council orientation, which was great. Learned a few things that probably learned before, but refreshing. It was really refreshing course. And the gentleman that did it, it was very light, but yet very informative, and say that. And also, I know the warden went there. I think Councilor Chan went there on last Saturday to the lobster event at Lockport. That was, and I want to give kudos out to all those organized committee, because that was an exceptional event for the area.
Yeah.
And I tell you, the Celtic chef at rice and seafood thing was excellent. So
lobster and rice.
Yeah.
It's delicious. Okay. Thank you for that. So on February 17th, I attended a virtual meeting with our CAO with respect to fire services modernization and the province's intention to transition to a new model of governance for fire services, and a new approach really to training over the next 3 years, I believe, was the transition period. February 18th, attended the Shelburne County Leadership Meeting in Lockport with the CAO and our Deputy Warden. And then, as Councillor Cool just mentioned, I attended the first Lockport Lobster Sea Catch Festival. It was really great to see so many people out and about, and lots of support from those who were selling all kinds of great things. I walked away with like sourdough bread and sweets and wine and everything else. So it was wonderful. There was a Silver Surfers short film viewing as well. That was at the Crescent Beach Center. I didn't get there in time to see that, but and that film actually has been nominated for 2 awards with Canada's Film Fest, so I'm hoping to be able to get to see that at some point. And the Little Mermaid project, that's a project, it's all about a future, I guess, site attraction near Lockport as well that they're working on. And I think they're going to have that at Crescent Beach. I'm not sure. But again, you know, great to see Lucy the Lobster. And as Councillor Cool mentioned, the Kilted Chef was there. And it was just really a super job done by everyone. Lots of people around. That was the Saturday. There was snow and everything. But it was sunny and it was just a beautiful day. So really well done.
Our member of parliament, I think I saw her there as well.
Yes.
So
she was.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great. Then, of course, we had our Monday snowstorm, which seems to be happening practically every Monday now, with offices closed until, I believe, noon yesterday. But it could have been a lot worse. I saw one of the staff at the town of Shelburne this evening at TLC, and she'd just gotten back from visiting her daughter in Paradise, Newfoundland, where they got 145 centimeters of snow. So I know we had more than enough, I guess, for us here, but it could have been a lot worse. Tomorrow is our first budget meeting, beginning at 8:30. Planning for that to be an all-day meeting. And, of course, everyone is welcome to attend. And the last thing that I will end with is, I'm sure most, if not all of you, are aware of the provincial budget and some of the cuts that are being proposed with that. One of the biggest things, I guess, for our community that really stood out, excuse me, right now, of course, and it's all over Facebook, is the closing of a number of museums and visitor information centers in the province. And, you know, when you look at that list, we have 2 in our county. We have the Ross Thompson House and the Barrington Woolen Mill. And my gosh, I've lived here all of my life, and I just always remember those 2 museums being there. So I think everyone feels a bit of shock, but certainly a lot of disappointment in that decision. So I would like to suggest for our council that that we write to the premier and copy our MLA to perhaps get in touch with the other 4 municipal units in the county to see if perhaps they want to join us in this letter writing. It could be just the 1 letter from all 5 municipal units to let them know just how disappointed we are in their decision regarding the museums and visitor information closures, especially those that are in our own county. and to ask them to reconsider. I mean, that it's a huge loss for the community. It's part of, you know, it's an important component of really the tourism industry or tourism sector for our area.
Right.
Huge loss. I mean, it's one thing to lose or to have buildings being closed. We're talking about, well, I really couldn't even guess at the amount, the dollar figure that we would lose with those closures. But you're also talking about loss of jobs as well. So a huge impact on our community. And I would like to ask for council's consensus to write to the premier, copy to our MLA, and again, perhaps reach out to the other four municipal units to see if they would consider having one letter sent to the province on behalf of our residents. Do we have consensus to do that?
Yes.
Councillor Thorburn Irvine?
I just want to underscore the second portion of your letter, of the messaging, I should say. So there is the concern, so underlining that, of course. But the reconsideration aspect, when we understand the through, if everyone remembers the NSFM conference from 2 years ago when the province set their strategy around property taxes for residents out of province, and then they rescinded that. You remember that announcement that occurred that day? Yes. I mean, it gave you the feeling that sometimes the government listens. And so I think we really need to underscore that second part. How do we veer away from this, given all that you've just said and the importance to the community? Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, just I just want to talk about timing for a sec. Getting the other four units in on it, it's probably going to take a few weeks because they're probably all going to have to take it to the councils. So just be aware it could take like 2-3, maybe even 4 weeks to get it done.
So perhaps we could ask them, say that we consider this to be urgent, and to see if they could even do like through email, consensus through email or something like that. If not, we can do one on our own and copy all of them. But I think the sooner we get that out there, the better. We don't have 2 or 3 weeks to wait. Okay. Wonderful. Thank you. That was everything that I had for my update. So it is now 7:36. And if I could have a motion, please, to go in camera at this time.
I'll make that motion.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. Thank you.